live from across Europe. This is Previously in Europe. I'm one of your co-hosts, Hugh, from London. I'm here with my lovely co-host, Kieran, in Berlin. Say hello, Kieran.
It's very hot, and I spent way too long trying to figure out which Ukrainian city was which.
It's not hot in London anymore. It's normal. By normal temperature, I mean it's mid-20s, which is totally fine, but last week was not fun. Not fun at all.
New.
Also, some governmental changes here have caused upset internally and have been vomit-inducing. But we're not going to talk about that today because I don't want to. And frankly, it's unimportant in the short term, but we'll see what happens in a few weeks. Instead, we're not going to talk about that. We're not going to talk about something else has happened this week that was important, but we're not going to talk about... I can't remember what it was. It's too hot. We're not going to talk about the heat wave. That's what we're not going to talk about. We're going to talk about the Ukrainian parliamentary elections and the sweeping victory of Volodymyr Zelensky in the return of our recurring segment, No Election Left Behind.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this big old election and Zelensky because I guess he's a thing now. I mean, okay, so it's also like he's the president. He was already the president, but now his party's in power. Mm-hmm. This is very reminiscent of Macron, I guess.
This is very similar to Macron. I think there's one way of viewing it where you're like, young reformer who's like who's become a media personality because he's relatively charismatic. Then calls snap election and gets, well, I think Macron's election was scheduled, but Zelensky called a snap election, which caused his party to have a unprecedented majority because they were like a new party. It was very odd for a new party because it was such a majority. But as we'll get into, Zelensky and Macron are different.
Yeah. I also want to point out that, like, this election is a snap election technically, but he only brought it forward by a couple of months. Like, it was meant to happen in October this year, or before. Scheduled to be held at the end of October. Overall, it seems like a lot of things structurally in Ukraine, in terms of elections, are very have been modeled after the French system.
Mm-hmm.
The two things that strike out to me is, one, they have a two-round presidential election, but in fairness, a lot of people do. The other thing being that the president holds a lot of power within Ukraine, similar to France. But then the last thing would be that they hold all their kind of like various elections not at the same time, but within a short span of one another.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is why we're seeing this, like, this new president came to power, and then suddenly when these elections are held shortly after his presidential election, his party, surprise, surprise, came to power, which is exactly what we saw with Macron.
Yeah. I think, like, to a certain extent, I like that as a concept, because otherwise you have setups where Macron could have run on his platform of, like, big reforms, and then got into power and had no control over the parliament, because his party was new, and everyone could have just refused to work with him.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. So, I don't know, it's got pros and cons, but, like, the French system traditionally has been that a party will get a majority, and then the president will run stuff for some period of time while they have control. But actually, historically, the Ukrainian case has been that since independence, there has been no Ukrainian majority in parliament at all. It's always been a coalition. So this is the first time that anyone has had both the presidency and a majority in parliament. Despite some of the previous presidents having, like, a lot of control. Also, it's notable that 60% of new members in the parliament are first-time politicians. So all the major, quote-unquote, major parties took big hits across the board. But as a caveat to that, I think there was, like, 45 to 50% in the previous parliament were all new, like, non-previous members of parliament. So it's actually not, like, it's bigger, but it's not, like, unprecedented in Ukraine. which is interesting. Do you want to take us through the results?
Yes, let's go through the results here. Okay, so the election was held, and up for grabs is technically 424 seats, but the total in the parliament is 450. Seats have been left vacant for the regions currently out of Ukrainian control. This is, you know, Donetsk, Luhansk, and Crimea, naturally enough. So in this slightly switched parliament format, 226 seats are needed for a majority. Cool. Now, coming in first place, technically, with 254 seats, so an outright majority, is Servant of the People, Zelensky's party. The parliamentary head of that is a guy called Razumkov. We'll go into their kind of like policies later, I guess, as a part of this podcast. But I'll give a brief kind of like ideological rundown of the rest of the parties. Next, we have with a total of 43 seats as the second largest party. Oof. Is opposition platform hyphen for life. Cool.
they're taking the great approach of being like, we're for life, what are you for?
it really makes it sound like we're the opposition platform for life.
they're opposing life.
Yeah. Or they're more just a more self-aware Greek communist party of, we're just going to always be in opposition.
So
they have 43 seats. This is an improvement from their seats before, which was 27. This is their first time running in this election, which makes me think that, like, they were formed in the last parliament and people from various parties like switched.
I think that's exactly what happened. It's former members of other parties, and this is the first time they've run as a bloc.
Yes. Yeah. They're kind of a social democracy and social liberalism party, so I guess center left would be the best way to describe them. However, with that comes a, as often happens with some Eastern European countries, the center left party has a kind of Euroscepticism and a Russophilia kind of slant to it. I'm not sure how much of this is being exaggerated or how like prominent this is, but they do seem to have a Russian rapprochement kind of aspect to their party, which also means they're quite popular in the borders of the conflict region, which I found very interesting. It seems that like the borders of the conflict regions are going to vote for a party that is supportive of making peace with Russia.
Yeah. So like generally how it's worked previously is there ends up being like the president and their like coalition they've cobbled together a pro-Russian opposition and then another opposition that is that, and like those may differ in size, but there isn't like a united opposition previously because of this this setup where you have some of them are very pro-Russia and some of them are very anti-Russia, so it's a kind of a weird setup for the opposition to the government. Anyway,
the next party in this list is All Ukraine Union Fatherland, simply abbreviated as Fatherland a lot of the time. They have again 26 seats, up from 7 last time. This is the party ran by Yulia Tymoshenko, who has been a concerning politician within Ukrainian politics. I believe there was a brief stint, I want to say halfway through Poroshenko's term, when she was making the news a lot for like saying ridiculous things, various scandals, getting involved in gas disputes. There was like a trial imprisonment for other criminal cases against Tymoshenko. She's kind of viewed as, I believe, the successor. She's viewed as the successor of the last of the previous government before Euromaidan.
Right, yeah, so she was prime minister twice, I think.
Yes.
Between in 2005 and then again in 2007 through 10.
Yeah. So she's kind of, she is viewed as like the previous government, pre Euromaidan. It's getting confusing now because it used to be able to say previous government when Petroshenko was in, but now he's the previous. Anyway,
yeah, it gets confusing. Like two governments ago, she's also her party is like an observer member of the EPP, and they're like very staunchly like, we want to join the EU for the purpose of becoming EPP members.
Yeah, it's an interesting one as well because. From as far as I can tell, if they were, you know, if Ukraine joined the EU tomorrow, this party would be in the EPP bloc, but would probably represent a more Orban wing of the EPP for sure. Like they do seem more on board with his kind of views on things.
A liberal authoritarianism. Yeah.
Naturally enough, with any party that names itself Fatherland. Cool. So the next biggest party with a whopping 25 seats down from 127. Which I believe, So this is Petro Poroshenko's European Solidarity. A lot of media, I think you had encountered, referred to it as Petro Poroshenko bloc. Let's call a spade a spade. This party kind of represents...
Oh, no, so that used to be its name. Its official name in the previous election was Petro Poroshenko bloc.
Right.
And they've now renamed themselves European Solidarity, possibly to lessen their affiliation with Petro Poroshenko.
Yeah, so interestingly enough, it's like a center-right party, liberal conservative, civic nationalism. It was supposedly pro-European. However, I think, as we have discussed in this podcast before, that it's more Poroshenko's record of being largely ineffectual and not really bringing in the change they promised that caused this party to be unpopular. This is also an observer of the EPP.
Yeah.
I think this would be more in line with what you would call an EPP party, to be perfectly honest. But yeah, Poroshenko was kind of largely very ineffectual and hated by everyone. Like the right wing of Ukraine didn't think he was right wing enough, and everyone else just.
But he was loved by the establishment of the West.
Yes, which was reflected in the fact that that party did very well in the foreign voting, which I find very interesting. And then last, because Ukrainian politics has a 5% threshold, and this party got, I believe, 5.8%, 5.8% of the vote, we have this new party called Voice. They managed to get 20 seats.
They're commonly called Holos, the Ukrainian word for voice, in press, because why would they translate it?
Yeah, it's... My biggest grievance with that one, like slightly going away from this topic, is when I find publications that have it in their like press rules, their copy rules, to translate AFD, Alternative for Deutschland, as AFG.
Oh, I don't like that at all.
No, I don't like
that
either.
That's intentionally confusing.
Anyway, Holos or Voice is this. Yeah, it was preceded by another party called Platform for Initiatives that kind of occupied a very similar space. But here they are now with a kind of very center, very pro-European, anti-corruption party. The only interesting thing is they're kind of in favor of online voting. That's like the only thing that really stands out. But after that, they're very like bog standard, almost ALDE party. Can't really donate much time to them. They only got 5.8% of the vote.
They are run by a famous Ukrainian musician, Farachuk, who there's talk of him and Zelensky just forming a coalition anyway, just basically to be like, oh, we could have even more votes in the parliament and get stuff done even faster, especially the like European integration stuff, because they agree on that, whereas they might not agree on a lot of other stuff. But I really like the idea of a party being led by a famous musician calling themselves Voice, being like, what's he known for? His voice. Okay, well then, Voice. That's done. Hold us. So there's a couple of other parties that got seats here and there, and it's all because the Ukrainian election system for this election. This will be the last election it happens in, as we'll get into. So it's a hybrid first past the post and also partyless proportional representation across the entire country. So you can run in seats, and there's 225 seats that you can first put the post in, and then that's where the seats are being taken off for the Donbass region and Crimea.
Yeah.
And then the party's proportional representation just like works as it would have otherwise. It's just a percentage, and you get the seats with a threshold. So there's a couple of parties that won individual seats. And also, 46 of the seats were won by independents who aren't in parties.
Yeah, there's 46 independents. Two others, according to Wikipedia, that I am not getting any information on. No. And then the other two parties that got in is, one is called Svoboda, which, that's freedom. Yeah. Wikipedia translates some things and then other, I don't know. This is called the All-Ukrainian Union Freedom, Svoboda, rather than the All-Ukrainian Union Fatherland, which, I mean, if you ask me to pick between these two, just on the name alone, because ironically, the Freedom one is like a Ukrainian nationalism, ultra-nationalism, right-wing populism party.
Yeah.
They got one seat in the first-past-the-post system. Hooray.
Good for them.
Yeah, the other one seat.
That's dying six.
That's true. The other Ukrainian party that got one seat via first past the post is Self-Reliance, or Self-Help, depending on how you translate that. Samoponich. Yeah, this is, ironically, unlike the other one that was called Freedom, Self-Reliance isn't fash. this one seems to be a kind of, again, another centrist, pro-European, very, like, it's, I would say probably if you were to throw it into, like, German or British politics, you would call it center-right.
Yeah,
it's,
right.
Yeah, it's pro-European, but it's got, like, a liberal conservatism and economic liberalism, which is to say, you know, market deregulation, favor of the market, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, again, only one seat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So that's the results of the voting system. Yeah, so the voting system changing. This is like the first bit of Zelensky's reform plans that is now basically is happening, where they're replacing the hybrid system with just party lists. So it'll be proportional representation of party lists. This is actually interesting because actually, like, Zelensky's party would do badly at it. Like, they would do worse in the results based on that. So I think this is a really, like, good example of, like, moving towards a more proportional system, even though it's slightly disadvantageous for you. Like, they wouldn't have an absolute majority if there was just partisan proportional representation.
They won so many
of the individual seats.
Yeah, to kind of contextualize and give the numbers there, Servant of the People, Zelensky's party, got 43.16% of the popular vote. So that means that the reason they've secured this majority is down to their first-past-the-post seats, which is slightly got them more seats. 124 was for the proportional, and then 130 was from the first-past-the-post.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess if you look at the like other, the other parties, like none of the other, like the next few parties got, you know, reasonable percentages. So like the next party got 13% of the vote, which obviously is way, way less than sort of the people.
Yeah.
And they got the accordant number of proportional representation seats, but they only won six first past the post seats. They weren't the most popular party basically anywhere comparatively.
So I think the thing with this is this kind of gets down to how broken first past the post as a system is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is kind of like a winner take all. So like out of these 130 seats that Servant of the People won, like how many of these are they, like, look at the amount of parties that were running. They could have easily won this seat with like 11% of the vote.
Yeah.
Like
first past the post. The system works.
Yeah. Because there is like, okay, I'm going to quickly count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 parties running across the entire country, and that's not including independents.
Who won more seats than any party other than than Zelensky's party.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But that is, like, with independents, with another 22 parties running, you can win a first past the seat with, like, very little.
Yeah, well, so some of those 20-odd won't be running in every seat is one of the things as well. So this, I guess, moves on to the... Now we should probably talk about what's the deal with Servant of the People. Because, as again, has been brought up many times, Zelensky is a comedian and actor that suddenly went into Ukrainian politics almost out of nowhere, won the presidency, and then started this party, Servant of the People. There's been critiques about this that... So part of it is that it was originally hard to box him in under like an umbrella of like, well, what does his party say they are? Yeah. And they eventually came out saying that they're libertarians, but also very pro-EU and pro-NATO membership. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like an interesting hodgepodge initially to be like, well, but a lot of libertarians don't like the EU because it's quite, you know, it has a lot of regulations and stuff. And then, well, similarly with NATO, NATO's a very, like, big bureaucratic thing to be part of if you're also, like, we're libertarians. So that initially, like, raised alarm bells of, like, that it's hard to actually box this into anything because it seems more complicated. They're bringing in, like, a proportional voting system, which is good. But also, it's a very new party, so in order to get the MPs all together, there's been critiques of from Ukrainian academics and people and like, journalists looking at this, saying that they don't really think the due diligence for candidate selection was great for Servant of the People because it's such a new party and the structures weren't in place to do it, and that like as long as you signed on to Zelensky's kind of like 12-point plan or whatever it is, it's a how many points was it 16-point plan as long as you sign on roughly to that, because a lot of it is very vague, you could possibly have gotten selected as a candidate. But on the other hand, like this is two ways of looking at this, is that this is the first time that, according to his majority as well, that and talking to and people saying it on the ground, that this is the first time that votes didn't go to like the lesser evil option, which is generally what Poroshenko's government was. It was one of the in a long succession of, well, the last person was so bad, we need this person who's like also not great, but I guess we can have them and see how it goes. Whereas people are actually voting for Zelensky because a lot of his policies are quite popular, like the ones that are easy to, you know, pin down and understand. It's generally around a mixture of deregulation and also heavy regulation. The way I described this to Kieran while we were talking about this beforehand was like, what if at the same time you deregulated the finance industry but also forced Obamacare on everybody?
We had a very lengthy conversation about like liberalism and libertarianism, and he is kind of a weird grab bag. It is very hard to... I think libertarian is fair, though, right? I mean, that seems to be, like, most of his...
That's the general crux of most of this. And the rest of it, the stuff that doesn't strike as libertarian seems to be a looking towards Europe thing. So they want to introduce reforms to the judicial system to enhance public control over it, for instance, which is vague, and it's unclear what they mean by that necessarily. But they also want to, like, reduce fees for, like, accessing the judicial system, stuff like that, versus kind of looking towards like these are all things that you could imagine would be EU programs that they'd like to have all countries related to it to have. But then it comes along with a lot of things that scream of what you would imagine when you hear libertarian policies. So I'll just read one of them, which is under the point six of his points, which are reform of law enforcement agencies. And the first point is, let us free businesses from arbitrariness of officials and raiders. This will significantly reduce the list of financial and economic crimes for which criminal liabilities arises. So effectively, like, getting rid of a lot of oversight on business activities. But then they also want to introduce a mechanism for witness protection. and also enforce punishment of police officers who are this proven malpractice, and prosecutors who are exceeding their official authority. But then they also want to legally regulate the right to own weapons. You're like, this, what?
Did you see a financial crime and didn't shoot him? Well, we can put you into witness protection. That's about it.
Yeah, I think that seems reasonable. Most of this is effectively like a vague statement, and then they're saying they're going to audit the current way it works, in order to like better understand. Because like a lot of the critiques a lot of the people have previously had about Ukraine's governments is like, you get a lot of Western media, which is like Western friendly Poroshenko, but then you look into it, he's very unpopular in his country because a lot of public services seem to just mysteriously not work, or have like corruption involved with them, or are benefiting the various Ukrainian oligarchs that have monopolies in their business.
Now, the city of Lviv and its surrounding area seems to love his party.
Is that the location of his large manufacturing plants?
Probably.
It's a very interesting list of a very, very, very big dichotomies of quite significant regulation being brought in. So like under reforms to the health service, they're saying they will introduce a compulsory health insurance system, so which sounds to me like either like the German system or Obamacare is probably what they're going after. But then they also want to reform the recertification of medicines because they see it's corrupt. They want to, create conditions for the development of preventative medicine. That sounds to me like deregulation of the licensing for medical research. And like that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it just is a weird. You both want to introduce new requirements that the government's going to impose, but at the same time deregulate part of that industry.
It is a strange kind of like 1-2 punch. I don't really understand where he's going with this.
Part of this is also that because of the somewhat hodgepodge and very large number of new previously unheard of figures that have now been elected to what will be the majority coalition, or possibly just the majority by itself, there's a lot of coverage is kind of pointing out that because we don't really know, is it such a new party and the party mechanisms aren't in place, it's unclear like how decisions are going to get made. Is Zelensky going to micromanage things based on previous interviews and other comments he's made? It sounds like that's probably not how it's going to work. It's going to be more of a democratic like internal party structure, but because the party is so new, it's unclear how that will like manifest in the parliament. Effectively, factions within the party will form, as they do in any party. You have like groups of people who are like have a specific agenda within the party. But it's unclear who the leaders of those positions will be, what the factions are going to be, which bits of this like actually quite broad list of reforms they want to do, which bits will actually get done, because whatever the powerful factions end up being, they will have pet projects and they will get done first, and due to the nature of politics in general, that might be all that gets done.
The other side of this would be like, when we say unclear, I think it's worth pointing out that it's also unclear to the people within the party. It is probably just a bunch of people going in, taking their seats in Ukraine, just being like nervously eyeing each other, being like, "Yeah, you a friend? Do I hate you?"
This party hasn't been around long enough for me to have like met you at multiple national party conferences. Ukraine is Ukraine is a huge country.
Yes,
the candidates running in like the far east of Ukraine are possibly have had no contact with some of the candidates in their party running in the far west of Ukraine. Both of whom could have won seats.
Servant of the people seats coming from the Far East. I'm not sure we should be concerned with that.
I think they conceivably have one or two. There's a lot of a lot of this as well as talking about direct democracy, which again insinuates like the intended internal structure will be very democratic. But again, because it's such a new thing, it's unclear which bits of this will get done. It might end up being a lot of the deregulation stuff gets done, and very little of the rest of it gets done. But it could also spin the other way. It could be the exact opposite, or some weird in between, and some a mixture of this stuff gets done. Either way, you will see lots of audits.
Oh, good. Good old audits.
Love me some audits.
Yes. Yeah, it's going to be a weird one, and I feel like... So one thing that strikes me as a little odd is it's a new party, and it doesn't look like he's going to micromanage things, which I feel like is almost... I feel like it's a bad idea from the perspective of servant of the people party perspective. Mm-hmm. Like, I do want a more democratic party. Mm. Democratic parties are cool. But what does strike me as strange is that he's kind of been elected on what appears like a cult of personality a little bit. He's got a lot of media training being an actor and a comedian. Mm-hmm. So he's probably... I'm assuming this popularity has come from the fact that he is doing TV interviews and is coming across as charming. Mm-hmm. Because his ideas are also kind of buck wild. But I don't want to be unfair to his policy positions. His policy positions might be popular in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. But a part of this is definitely his charm. It has to be. He is like the leader of this party, and he is an actor, a comedian. Mm-hmm. And then to... disperse that power feels like a mistake on their part, because you can't guarantee that this grab bag of people who have filled up these 200 plus seats are going to be in any way as charming as him. It's kind of like when you see these parties where like the leader of the party like is gone or steps down, and you're just like, what the hell does this party do now, kind of thing.
Yeah. I can imagine a Republican march without Macron be a shaky institution.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like there's similar situations all across Europe that I'm not thinking of quite just yet, but that does feel like a kind of mistake. He needs to kind of ride this wave of his own popularity until there are people within serving the people who are potentially like carrying that mantle. I feel like this seems to be the case of a lot of German politics nowadays, is the establishment parties really do not have anyone in them that is anywhere as popular as the current leaders or historic leaders. Current leaders being like, no one in CDU is as popular as Merkel was, and no one in the SPD is popular.
Yes, and it hasn't been for some time. Yeah, I think there's it's an interesting thing, because the... Like a lot of the whether or not what will happen in the parliament is kind of down to like more the backroom stuff as well. So like who ends up on parliamentary committees and that kind of things. Like that is a lot of how the Ukrainian parliament works. Much like many other parliaments. But I guess as long as he maintains the positive face and nothing that he actually disagrees with starts happening, as long as it's kind of generally pushing bits of his agenda, I think that will still work for him to be able to ride his popularity for a while. I guess it depends as to whether or not any of his reforms work and whether or not they're popular once they start happening. Because I think everyone will like the Widows Protection program, but people and like reducing the fees to access the court system. But they might not like how he reforms the court system otherwise. Some of this will be very popular. Some of it will not be popular.
Yeah.
It's very curious. Anyway, I think that's like most of the... how do you feel about Zelensky? Positive? Negative?
For me, it is really a kind of like too early to tell type of thing what happens with this party. Because it's not what I feel about Zelensky, because... The Ukrainian system isn't really asking that question at this point. No, the Ukrainian system is asking, how do we feel about servant of the people, which is coincidentally led by Zelensky. Because this isn't a system where there is a president and he's ceremonial, or there is a president and he doesn't have control of like the lower house or whatever. It's this party and what they end up doing. Because it's like, when you say some of these policies mightn't be popular, it's like, I don't know anymore. because Zelensky is a candidate that like won the presidential election with these like weird grab bags of like social democracy plus libertarianism things lumped together, and the Ukrainian electorate went, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So maybe this is exactly what the Ukrainians want. Maybe this is, maybe democracy is working perfectly.
Yeah. So I like, again, I think this is the view of this where it's notable that this is the kind of the first time where it's very conspicuous that some voters are actually happy about this and are kind of saying like, I hope this, I'm not disappointed because this actually seems like something I wanted to vote for, as opposed to the previous setup, which was, we need to get rid of this person, this is the only viable option otherwise. It was very much how Poroshenko kind of came to power.
Yeah.
And then proceeded to disappoint everyone, which is not in a not surprising manner. But I think there is a big appetite for change, and it might happen. And I this potentially will, at the very least, start the ball rolling on other parties having to put forward an actual message of things that they could concretely possibly do, and actual critiques of how the system works currently, or critiques of the current government, as opposed to just generally being like, they're corrupt, we're not corrupt, because everyone knows they are.
Yeah, it's a very kind of like Ukrainian politics before this did seem a little kind of situation. Which is interesting, and we can lead on to our next topic now, because there's some stuff in the background in Ukrainian politics that is worth mentioning, and this does affect a kind of electoral position of a lot of people based on like looking at these results. And so I'll basically say that the security service of Ukraine, sometimes known as the SBU, and by sometimes known, I mean always known as the SBU, but within Ukraine, said it detained a Russian tanker in a Ukrainian port on Wednesday, 24th of July. Authorities said the tanker was involved in blocking Ukrainian vessels from sailing through the Kerch Strait in November. The Russian vessels are alleging that they were breaking territorial waters, and the Ukrainian vessels are saying that they were in international waters. Yeah. So a lot of stuff like this has been happening in the Sea of Azov?
Azov.
Yeah. Azov. And the Black Sea at large, ever since the whole Crimean situation has increased tensions, and the whole territorial waters thing has ramped up disputes between these two areas.
Yep.
Overall, I don't want to say doom and gloom here. I feel like Ukraine is just following into the normal pattern that a lot of like post-Soviet countries have fallen into, Russia, particularly in Europe, where for anyone who doesn't pay attention to Estonian politics, you'll often see there's a giant lake as a part of the border between Estonia and Russia, where very often a report will come out being like, Russia kidnapped this fisherman. Russia says it's a spy. Estonia says it's a fisherman. Estonia kidnapped this fisherman. Russia says it's a fisherman. Estonia says it's a spy. And then eventually they trade.
Yeah.
Whether they were spies or not is not really of material consequence after the trade happens, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, this kind of stuff happens with the bordering countries of Russia that don't really align with Russia's geopolitical agenda. So this looks like the growing pains of Ukraine and its new like geopolitical trajectory, I guess. But it's worth pointing out that this is like affecting voter decisions, as I was kind of like ribbing on earlier, that like serving the people doesn't do well in the east of Ukraine. I'm not really kidding. Like, if you look at like a first past the post map of the country, nearly all seats, like a lot of the seats, went to Servant of the People. Of the five largest cities in Ukraine, all of which are like multi-district cities, only Kharkiv, which is the second largest city, had like a constituency that didn't go to Servant of the People. I think Donetsk is one of the largest cities in Ukraine, but it's no longer voting in Ukrainian elections. Anyway, but the border regions, let's call them the border of the conflict regions. These are the regions, these are the electoral districts that are within the regions that have an occupied territory. Yeah. They are all going to Opposition for Life party, mainly because they do seem to have a like strategy for like what I'd say like Western newspapers would probably call like you know, bending over backwards for Russia. But I think the people on the ground there view it as like a realistic chance for peace. Similarly, when you look at the percentage voting for these parties, it is again the border regions that are voting overwhelmingly for this pro-Russian party.
Yeah.
And distinctly not voting for servant of the people, which I find very interesting. So, yeah, this is still coloring some people's views on things, but yeah. I guess for a lot of Ukraine, it's a bit out of sight, out of mind kind of thing.
Certainly in terms of the like, certainly in terms of the presidential campaign, it was, and I imagine a lot of the, like, my impression is a lot of the presidential campaign was like, you know, first past the post elections are often fought on like weird local issues that aren't necessarily combined with national issues, so it's kind of a coming out strong against the Russian occupied territories and the annexation of Crimea. Is a popular position in a lot of Ukraine, but not necessarily popular in places that that's affecting directly, which is the bordering regions that have to bear the brunt of any escalation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's that, and possibly, like, talk of, like, closer ties with NATO just doesn't rouse Russia up and causes incursions. So, there's that. Yeah, I guess, yeah, just keep in mind that there is also a continuing conflict in the east that may affect reforms.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that, like, so a lot of newspapers and I'm gonna say Western publications again, non-Ukrainian publications, let's put it that way, will pay lip service to the fact that this is happening.
Yes,
but I haven't really seen the other thing that's being represented here, which is for a lot of Ukrainians, this isn't actually a deciding factor on who they vote for. Yeah, the servant of the people, Zelensky's position on Russia in particular at the Crimea crisis, like Western audiences or like Western journalists were very fuzzy about that when Zelensky was first elected. They basically didn't know how to report it. And from what we could see, if I remember correctly, was the position is more like still in opposition, but probably a bit more constructive and diplomatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to the like Poroshenko position of we're going to talk to the West and figure it out.
Yeah. Which is a little, I feel like, in the position of journalistic outputs covering Ukraine from afar, that was a little harder to pin down in the dichotomy of like pro NATO versus pro Russia. And I think a part that explains that does seem to be that this isn't actually a huge concern for a lot of Ukrainians, except for those in the border regions, naturally enough.
No, because, you know, as we discussed, the list of reforms that Zelensky thinks are a problem is so long because Ukrainians have a lot of, like, problems with the way their government works generally, and they would probably care. The people in Kiev would care more about that than they do about Crimea in the short term, certainly. But I guess if you came out saying you wanted reform stuff and you were pro-Russian annexation of Crimea, you would lose those votes. It's just not the main voting point, even though there is an active conflict. I guess it is very interesting, because I guess you would expect that to be the main thing, but obviously it's a slow burn thing that's been going on for so long. There's more important pertinent matters to most people.
I feel like it's very reminiscent of like Irish politics during the Troubles. Like, I mean, by Irish politics, I mean the politics of the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah.
Where like, not every vote was about the party's treatment of what was happening in Northern Ireland.
No, exactly. And most people were concerned about how the government change was going to affect the economy and their like livelihood, more specifically, not necessarily about what their position was on negotiating with unionists. Didn't factor into everyone's mind.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Ukrainian election. If you like both gun rights and Obamacare, this is the election for you.
Don't like your doctor? You can shoot him.
Only if you obtain a permit.
Yes. And that was another episode of Previously in Europe. Previously in Europe is produced and recorded by Hugh O'Brien and Kieran Dold. If you like the show, you can follow us on all the social medias. We are on Twitter at Prev in Europe, P-R-E-V in Europe. We have an email address, previouslyineurope@gmail.com. You know, send us an email. We're on Facebook. Just search Previously in Europe. There's a group. If you don't look like a bot, we'll let you in. And we have a Discord that is linked to on the Patreon, which leads us to the Patreon. The Patreon is very important. Patreon.com/previouslyineurope. If you like the show and want to support us and want to help us out, send us some money. And that will keep the podcasting lights on. It will make us feel worthwhile while we look into the insane policy positions of Servant of the People, the new political party of Ukraine. So, yeah, you will also get some rewards, including getting your name read out, like these cool cats. Dermot Burke, Jairus Arian, Justin Paul Sammons, Lisa Shalagina, Michael Hall, Newt, Niall McLaughlin, and Subliminal Kid. So if you want to be like those cool cats, send us some money and we will read your name out and, you know, think you're really cool, because you are. Very much so. You can find out all this information on our website, previouslyineurope.eu. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a nice review on your podcasting app of choice. That kind of stuff really helps. Thanks for listening.